Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Six points from a possible 18 to start Manchester United's season. 10 goals conceded in four games. These are two of the many stats that sum up the dire start to the 2023-24 campaign for Erik ten Hag's team. And once again, we're left asking, is this a fair reflection of the team? And where the answer in previous games might have been no, perhaps this time the answer is yes. Let's see. Brighton and Hove Albion rode out the early dominance of United and then raced away after half-time. Young Hannibal scored a fantastic long-range goal to reduce the deficit, but that was about it for United's response. It's time to dissect that. A very warm welcome to the Manchester United Woody Podcast. I'm Harry Robinson. Jack Tate is with me. We'll review defeat to Brighton. We'll preview a glamorous trip to Bayern Munich. We'll compete at Guess the Player. I'll give you your regular academy briefing, and our patrons will get a bonus section in which we talk about the international break, Ten Hag's United future, and loads more. Let's begin. Jack, for me, this was a management issue. People can, they have, and they will have a go at the players for the performance and with some justification. But this match, unlike perhaps the others before, felt like a series of mistakes from Erik ten Hag. Is that fair, or is that a coming from a place of great disappointment and dismay?
I think it was 15 minutes of quite good management, and then
absolutely, yeah,
75 of really poor management. I think this Ten Hag could have made all the right decisions in this game, and given the injuries and the issues that we have all across the pitch, we still might not have won the game. But I think there were a number of decisions that Ten Hag made that didn't make too much sense, and that I think he should take a lot of responsibility for. This was probably, I think, and this might just be me not kind of thinking so much about other occasions where maybe Ten Hag hasn't managed as well as we think he should have. But off the top of my head, feels like probably his worst in-game managerial experience that I can remember since he joined.
I think the game it reminded me of was the Newcastle away game last season, where again, there was that sense of what are these changes? Why have you made them at this time? And why have you made them? Why have you made so many at once? And why have you taken this player off and brought this player on? I thought it was probably Ten Hag's worst day since St. James's Park last season, where we came out of that thinking that was pretty baffling. You're absolutely right. First 15 minutes were fantastic. Some of the best football United's played this season. Proper dominance, like dominated Brighton. And it was brilliant to watch. It was free flowing. There were some nice little bits of individual brilliance. There were Tariq Lamptey was on a booking within 4 minutes. Steele had to save from Rashford very early. Then there was that a lovely move with an Ericsson kind of Maradona turn. And then the ball kind of going forward with a lovely pass out from Fernandes. And then Rashford's cross just evading Rasmus Højlund. And then a couple of others. At the other end, we were cleaning up the only attack that they had with some ease. But then the energy just lapsed just a little. And yeah, crucially, De Zerbi got the better of Ten Hag in that Brighton responded through their manager, not through their players trying any harder, but through their manager. And De Zerbi found the weakness in United's press. And that press was working so well. It was going so well. But De Zerbi found the weaknesses, exploited them. And there were lots of little things you can talk about in this game. And there were still fine margins. But I do think this was a case of one manager getting the better of the other. I think what we can say less easily is what should the changes, maybe you'll have an opinion on this, but what should the changes or should the reaction of Ten Hag been once Brighton took the lead and started getting a better hold on the game?
Well, I think the biggest thing for me, well, firstly, I think Ten Hag sprung a bit of a surprise with the lineup, playing a diamond, which we've not seen under him, and playing Rashford as more of a second striker alongside Hoyland, which I think, you know, seemed to work in the first 15 minutes or so. De Zerbi
slightly injury enforced. Well, situation enforced, should we say, because of the lack of right winger, basically.
Yeah, and Ten Hag seemed to basically trust McTominay more than he trusted Pellistri, because we could have played the same formation that we have if we played Pellistri out wide or shuffled Bruno Fernandes out there, but since we were so short on options in midfield anyway, it didn't really make sense to move Bruno Fernandes out there away from his best position. So understandable, that change, and De Zerbi admitted as much after the game that caused Brighton problems and it was something that they didn't expect. Then the big tactical change in the game was that Brighton really started exploiting the fact that we were so narrow in that final third. And this is a problem that I've had and we've had with Ten Hag's pressing style for quite a while, actually, is that the front, usually it's sort of four or five players. In this case, it was sort of the front five, so detached from everyone else in the team. You ended up with the front two plus McTominay, Fernandes and Eriksen being relatively aggressive when Brighton had the ball at the back, which was fine, and they were doing a decent enough job. But we then were left with this huge gap between that front five and then Casemiro and the back four. The Casemiro and the back four didn't seem to want to push up and squeeze the pitch too much because they didn't want to leave space in behind. Martinez would occasionally drop deep with Welbeck, but the gap that Martinez then left wasn't properly filled in. And because we were leaving so much space between where Welbeck was dropping into and our forward line, it was so easy for him to play passes either into Welbeck for him to either turn or lay off to someone else, or just use Welbeck as a bit of a decoy run. It played out slightly differently, but it's the same kind of issue that we had. To go back to the Barcelona game, for example, I talked a lot at home about how in the first half we struggled because we were being really aggressive in our press, but the fullbacks wouldn't push up and join in with the wingers and the forwards. And so there were easy out balls all the time for Barcelona. And it was the same issue here, just playing out with a different formation for United, in that this front line was being quite aggressive and actually executing it quite well. But then the rest of the team weren't pushing up to support them. And I don't blame the defence and the fullbacks and Casemiro for that. That's clearly an instruction that they've been given not to be so aggressive in their press.
It's a weird game, isn't it? Because, well, football is, but that's not what I didn't mean in general. But this match was, it's a strange one to look back on, because I think coming out of the ground and thinking about it now, you're so clouded by the final 20 minutes. And that's obviously so often the case. And there's understandably anger at the way the United played in the second half particularly. But this wasn't a case of effort. And there were a lot of people around me very angry, particularly at Rashford, which is something we've spoken about before, which is kind of a regular theme in which Rashford can look better on TV than he does in the ground, because I think people in the ground there's a bit of a preconception about his effort levels when United are not doing as well, being lower than they are when the rest of the team is playing well. I don't think it's always fair, given how much Rashford has driven the team forward, sometimes single-handedly, particularly last season, but in seasons before that. But obviously people inside the stadium could see the whole pitch at all times and can see when players' heads are down and when there's a kind of a lack of pressing that you might not get on the TV, the chosen TV angle at any moment. And so there's obviously a lot of anger coming out of the ground. But once again, it feels, and we said this after the Wolves game, that the first half is the one really worth, long-term, worth analysing. Would you agree on that front?
Yeah, I think so. And it was... But the Wolves game, like at the time we were sort of saying like the first half was okay, and it was, but even that first half wasn't great. It was better than the second because the second was really bad. But I think there was still plenty of issues in that Wolves first half, and I think we've seen those played out since.
Yeah, I don't mean that the first half of the Wolves game was kind of what United are aiming for. I just mean, again, this is another match at Old Trafford where it feels like the second... It's almost as if you're left with an impression at full time that isn't really what you felt for most of the game. And obviously results and those final minutes are the things that really stick in the mind. I'm not saying anyone should think or do differently, but it's what I notice. Like, I come away from the ground fuming because of those final 10 minutes. And then when you think about it, you think that's just such a... a misrepresentation of what else happened. And so there's that weird kind of, it's a strange way to analyze it. I think what concerned me is the, and again, you don't want to read too much into managers' quotes, but Ten Hag's response, you mentioned earlier that De Zerbi said that he was surprised by United's starting lineup and the way that we played, but then responded after 15 or 20 minutes. And whereas Ten Hag's response was, the first 20 minutes were very good. We have to stick to the plan because it worked well. We had quite a few chances. And maybe he's just saying that to just get rid of the media and answer a couple of questions and get on with his day. Whatever. I hope that's not, I expect that's not what he's thinking. Because yes, United, and this is something we've spoken about after the Spurs game and much of last season, United need to do better at scoring in the moments where we're on top. But that would concern me if Ten Hag's thinking we just have to stick to the one game plan, because the changes were, he did make changes and they were baffling. And maybe we'll get onto them a bit, but when I feel as if when we started recording, I was very focused on those changes, but now we're talking about it. Does this game actually, it felt different to other games, but did it act because partly because we had a different formation, partly because we played slightly differently, and partly because we started very, very well. But has it actually highlighted quite similar issues in that after that Wolves game, we said it, and after the Arsenal and the Spurs games, we spoke about how United seemed to have two big issues. A couple had been fixed from last season, including like the goalkeeper's ability on the ball. But United seemed to have two big issues. One was the space in midfield, and the other was not being clinical enough in scoring. And actually, there was a whole lot of other kind of fluff around this Brighton game, but were those the same issues again?
Those two issues were definitely there. I think there was probably a little bit more to it in the Brighton game as well. And I would definitely put the pressing structure as part of that, which I guess you could lump in with the issue of the midfield getting overrun. But to me, it's a little bit more than that, because
okay, maybe it's sort of... Sorry, it's not... The midfield being overrun is not the issue. It's the symptom, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And the root cause of it is more that we just aren't... Our defensive structure, especially against teams like Brighton that are going to force you to be in a good structure, they're going to try and play through you no matter what. Our defensive structure isn't solid enough to be able to deal with that. And that's why the midfield gets overrun.
Right.
You know, Casemiro still was ending up having to watch far too much space and far too many players. But that's not... Whereas in the Wolves game and against Forest, that was because, you know, we'd be on the attack and then we'd get hit on the counter-attack and we weren't in a... You know, we didn't have a good enough rest defence. It was different in the Brighton game in that this was in a set Brighton attacking phase, and
the way
we're still
they were playing through us
in midfield.
Yeah, it was the, I know I've seen quite a few different clips and different kind of analysis on social media and TV, but ultimately they all come down to what you're saying, which is the pressing structure, where basically our players were either committing too much or their positioning was allowing just a fraction of space for the Brighton defenders or deep midfielders to kind of play that vertical pass through and break the lines. And it's really hard to get it right against a really, really good Brighton team. And they are so good. And that's why the first 10, 15 minutes felt so good, because you thought, right, we're really taking a good team to task it. It's hard to get it right, but United just kept getting it wrong. And it was fine margins. And so I guess if you were trying to be optimistic, you'd be saying, would you say the ideas are right with how it was playing out? Or do you think there's a fundamental kind of weakness to, I think you probably do think that, don't you? That there's a fundamental weakness to the way that Ten Hag's this pressing structure is working? Or do you more think it's a high risk strategy that United aren't good enough yet, so that risk is being punished?
I think Ten Hag did get it right in the first place, but then it was a failure to adjust. And that is a cardinal sin as a manager at this level. You have to be able to adjust to what the team is going to do. And the adjustment that Brighton made was very simple. They just split their centre-backs wider and pushed the full-backs further forward. So then it meant that narrow front five that we had, that had done really well at closing down with the space that Brighton were trying to play into in the first 10 or 15 minutes, were now forced to cover an area that was twice the size.
Yeah.
It just feasibly can't work. And so Brighton were able to manipulate that front five. I do think this is a pretty entrenched issue. And it's something that I don't think Ten Hag has ever got right in his time at United. There's maybe been one or two games where I think we've done well. And I go back to that Barcelona game because it was one that I just remember really clearly, that in the second half, we did make a really good adjustment because we actually went way less aggressive in our initial press. We didn't put as much pressure on the centre-backs and the goalkeeper. We kind of let them have it. But then that gave us a much better platform so that once the ball went in, either into midfield or to the fullbacks, we were in a much better position to then put that player under a huge amount of pressure. And we got a lot of high turnovers in that second half of that game. Against Brighton, we never made that kind of adjustment. And you mentioned that this is sort of a high risk, that we don't want to go to such a high risk strategy as to, you know, push the fullbacks up and really squeeze the pitch and play a really high line. I have sympathy for that. I really do, because this isn't a team full of players that are known for their pressing, really. But to me, if you don't want to play that kind of high risk strategy, and that decision in itself, I don't disagree with, don't push the front line so far forward then. You know, play more conservatively with the entire team, have a bit more of a mid press rather than trying to press really high. Keep the forward line sort of in line with Brighton's fullbacks in midfield and play like we did in that second half against Barcelona back in the spring at Old Trafford. That's the way I think that this United team should approach this if we don't want to be this really aggressive pressing team. But at the moment, we've got one foot in one camp and one foot in the other.
Yeah. What I'm wary of is when Ten Hag first came to United, we spoke about how there'd probably be some painful days. And in fairness, there were some painful days last season, but apart from the Liverpool 7-0, which was unspeakable, they all came at the very start of the season. When we then previewed this season, we said, well, Ten Hag was so pragmatic last season and that it seemed that he was now this summer and throughout the 23-24 season was going to kind of start implementing his style and give his kind of real mark on this United team. And I think he is beginning to do that. And so when we spoke about that in summer, we said, well, actually, maybe this autumn and this winter will be the one with a lot of pain in it and a lot of defeats. This is it, isn't it? I think the concern, and I wonder what you think on this, the concern is, are we seeing the signs that this is part of a painful process towards success? Or does this just feel bad at the moment? And it's quite hard to kind of zoom out into that bigger picture. Less than 24 hours after the game. But I wonder if you can.
I'm struggling so far. And obviously this is only a very small amount of games to start the season with a lot of injuries and other personnel issues that Ten Hag is dealing with. But I am struggling to see this as sort of teething problems as we move towards a different type of system, something more akin to what Ten Hag really wants us to play. Because it's not like we're trying. I would have much more sort of sympathy and patience with this if we were trying that more aggressive pressing style and we were just losing out on those duels and teams were playing through us that way. We had a really high line. We're just finding it very difficult to transition to a more aggressive team. Or if we had given away a goal, kind of like at Brentford in the 4-0 last year, where we're trying to play out from the back and we end up losing the ball. To me, we're getting beat in the same way as we did at the start of last season and throughout last season at various times. And that is, I think, why I don't have as much sympathy for this performance and for the way that we're approaching the start of this year, because it all, with the exception of the first half against Arsenal, which did feel very different to last year, at least compared to that same game last year. I think pretty much everything else that we've seen at the start of this season has been very, very similar to what we saw last year. And that's where I struggle to give too much sympathy.
Yeah, and the kind of response back to that would be that we haven't really played with any of our new signings. Anana, absolutely, but we have seen differences there. But this was Hoyland's first start. Mount's now injured. Amrabat's not available yet. And so it does make some sense. But on the other hand, Ten Hag has to improve the players here. And he has already done that with some players, such as Aaron Wan-Bissaka, and he got the best out of Marcus Rashford last season. But we need to see it from a full team point of view.
Which is absolutely true. But at the same time, let's take Brighton as an example. They made 6 changes yesterday from their previous game. Not necessarily enforced, granted, but they made 6 changes and looked. You could watch those 2 games with sort of no colour on the TV and you'd know they were the same team playing by the way that they're playing. What frustrates me about United is that we don't have that identity yet under Ten Hag. And again, there's, as we said in the Patreon episode, there's still a lot of patience there, even though I'm frustrated about these repeated mistakes. There is a lot of patience because of everything that Ten Hag is dealing with. But I think that is a point worth making, that not having those new signings available, I don't think means necessarily that our performance should be at the bad level that it was.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We said we talk about, we've kind of referenced the changes a lot, but I think we need to get it off our chest, because a comment out of Old Trafford yesterday was just all I could think about was Ten Hag substitutions. And that's kind of the classic thing where you focus in on something that probably wasn't the most important part of the game. But I did just, the lack of changes tactically in the first half, baffling. And a mistake. And then the kind of excessive personnel changes in the second half were infuriating, these momentum sapping substitutions at key moments, which stopped any hopes of like a famous comeback from happening. It did remind me of Newcastle away last season. I think making three changes at once is either a sign of dominance if you're leading by a few goals. Otherwise, it's a sign of failure. And it just felt like at the moments where United just needed the boost of one new set of fresh legs, younger tactics come in and provide some verve and something slightly different for Brighton's defence to cope with. It just needed a slight adaptation, a slight new introduction. And instead, it was these wholesale changes that took away the good bits of United and just kind of set us back another 10 minutes when there was only 10 minutes left in a game and changed the game in Brighton's favour. Infuriating. I just wonder what was going through his mind. I know Højlund has just come back from injury, but bringing Martial on there was I don't know. Bringing Reguilón off when he was playing very well. And
I mean, the Højlund one, if it was the case that he was being protected from injury, okay. I was very, very frustrated when he got brought off, and everyone's heard the boos in the stadium.
I've never heard a reaction like that at Old Trafford.
And I think that was understandable. Yeah. And I think it's also understandable from Ten Hag's point of view if he was protecting him from injury. But it seemed like Ten Hag fell into this trap. And I think he does this in the other direction too when we're trying to protect a lead. Sometimes I feel like managers, they fall into a trap of just thinking, I'm losing, let's just flood the pitch with attacking players. Or I'm winning and we need to protect a lead, let's just flood the pitch with defensive players. Thinking that that will, especially right towards the end of games, thinking that that will just, you know, get the outcome that you want. But that isn't how it works. Like, you should be facilitating your best players being able to do the good things that they do, the reason why they're your best players. I mean, look, forget the last 5 minutes or so, because that at that point it was pure desperation. But for the last 15, 20 minutes of that game, Bruno Fernandes was playing as a holding midfielder.
Yeah.
I mean, that I cannot fathom at any point that United would need a goal and Bruno Fernandes is playing that far back in our team. He is our most creative player. We should be facilitating him and Rashford in particular as our two most dangerous attackers to put them in the best positions possible for them to do what they do best. And if we need to bring on other players, fit them in around those two players or whoever your best players are at that point in time. That's, I think, what frustrated me. It's just sort of seemed like this big rush to say, let's get 7 or 8 attackers on the pitch because that will help us get a goal. When actually probably only 1 or 2 of those attackers were actually in their right position, and they weren't even players that you would say that United really rely on.
Yeah. We'll talk a bit about some positives after the first guess the player clue, which is me setting for you this week, a nice break from this talk of despair. Clue one of three. And guess the player, for those who are new to the game, is always ex or current Manchester United players or staff members. And clue one is, I captained my country and I'm their all-time leading goal scorer. I captained my country and I'm their all-time leading goal scorer. Any thoughts? It would be hard to have a guess from that.
Well, you baited me a few weeks ago into guessing Mason Mount when it was actually Tom Heaton.
Yeah.
And I feel like you're baiting me again to guess Wayne Rooney.
Well, he's not.
And he's not, I mean, he's not the top scorer anymore for England.
Bayern Munich, Harry Kane is
definitely won't be guessing.
Yeah. Any other thoughts?
So was a captain of their country and that country's leading goal scorer, is that right?
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, Ronaldo obviously comes to mind as well.
That's true, yeah. I'll let you mull it over.
Think of others. trying to think of, I'm gonna be trying to wrap my brains thinking of players maybe from slightly obscure countries.
Positives wise, Højlund, brilliant, and the reception said it all. It was a negative one for Ten Hag and for Martial, who fans are sick of and who did absolutely nothing again. But yeah, Højlund looks the part, and I was gutted for him. The kind of, I don't know what you call it. Yeah, the intensity with which he celebrated. Not some kind of mad run. There was just a real kind of intensity to the kind of fist pump he was doing, where he thought, that's a dream fulfilled right there. And it was a lovely moment, and an equalising goal just like not too long before half time, and on your first Old Trafford start from a new signing who supported the club as a kid and a 20-year-old. All of those factors made it a large celebration for everyone at the ground. Maybe it was slightly different for everyone in East End who might have been able to see that it was out of play, but from the Stretford end, had absolutely no idea and was baffled as to why VAR were even checking it. It looked like it was out of play. So fair enough. But yeah, it was again for the second game in a row. I came on here after the Arsenal game and said how good the celebration for Garnacho's, what could have been a winner from him, were. And for the second game in a row, this kind of brilliant celebration ruined by a VAR call and what came after as well.
Yeah, it's just so frustrating to have that ruled out. But I think Højlund, was very good again. I feel very similar coming out of this game as to how I felt about him coming out of the Arsenal game, really, in that he's a great focal point for us. He uses his physical presence really well. His movement is good. He just needs to refine his technique, really. And that is a very common thing among young players. You know, there's a few times where he did manage to get the ball in good positions and his touch let him down a little bit. Sometimes when he's one-on-one against the defender, can maybe have a few more options, I would say, in trying to get past rather than just being able to shift it onto his left foot. But overall, I mean, him and Rashford's link up in particular, you know, was really, really good. That ball from Rashford very early on from the left-hand side, where Højlund probably should have scored, honestly. He was sort of stumbling eventually when he got to it. I mean, that, when have you ever seen Rashford have a strike partner that enables him to look up and first time play across like that into the box?
And he's still getting used to it, isn't he? There was the one where he probably should have passed it and didn't. And that drew a lot of frustration from everyone in the stands. But
I think Højlund is going to be a work in progress. And to be honest, I'm expecting that as the season goes on, there will be games where we get quite frustrated with him, because I think he will probably give the ball away a fair amount. I think he will probably miss some chances, but...
Don't say that. We need one positive.
I was going to say, but I think what you've seen from these first couple of games is that there is a lot to work with here.
Yeah.
And there is a player who is clearly understands how to play as a striker. And that seemed like such a simple thing, but United haven't had a player that understands that and is below the age of 30 in about 10 years.
Well, also it's the... Lukaku did, but...
Of course. I forgot about Lukaku.
And Lukaku was good for a season. I think,
you've got to say, actually, Højlund isn't that dissimilar to a young Lukaku in his current form.
I was going
to
say, because we've spoken about before in terms of United striking options, and we speak about Martial, and we're like, when he's come back from injury and he's come into the team, and everyone's, like, including us, has been like, Martial's hold-up play is so good. It's so nice having a number nine who can hold the ball up. And... yes, in comparison to who he was replacing, his hold-up play when he came in last season was a much higher level than whoever he was replacing. And then you see Rasmus Højlund come in and you think, that's what striker holding the ball up is like. Proper strength, like serious strength, and so strong that he doesn't have to win the ball before it's bounced. He can back into his defender, push them back and wait for it to be better for him to control. And we said it after the Arsenal game, but again, it was true here. I'm excited. Reguilón was good. We'll talk a bit about him more in the Patreon Q&A because we've got a comment on him and a question from him. And Hannibal, so pleased for him. Gutted that it couldn't come in better circumstances, but he has worked very hard for that, as he said on Twitter post-match. And I've had very high hopes about him since he joined United, and I spoke to the scout who found him for United and a few other people who knew about him, and United spent a a fair amount, nearly in a deal that could have gone up to 10 million euros if he hits certain targets to buy him from Monaco, and massive interest in it from him. He's worked on so many different parts of his games, and he looked brilliant in the 18s, brilliant in the 21s. He had some great moments for Birmingham City, and Troy Deeney spoke very positively about his attitude. There are problems, not with his attitude in terms of work rate or anything, or like training ethic or anything like that, but he needs reining in on the pitch. And there was one moment where he almost got into trouble, even in this game off the bench. But yeah, he's worked really hard even on that as well. And I'm delighted for him. Must be the first Tunisian to score for Man United, I've just thought of. But it was a fantastic goal as well.
Yeah, it was. And I'm delighted for Hannibal. He's someone that has really had to work hard and wait a long time for his opportunities. I think he's only made one start for United in the past, or maybe there's one start in the Premier League. You know, he's waited a long time for this on a series of loans, where he's always sort of done well without sort of setting the world alight in the same way that like Ahmad did last year. But like you mentioned, as the whole time he's coming through the academy, you know, this podcast has kind of been running throughout that whole time. You sort of track him every year, and he's always impressed at every age group. And so I'm just really happy that he's, you know, circumstances have ended up giving him probably a bit more of a chance than he expected. And, you know, he took it. He did well when he came on. It's a great strike for the goal, great moment for him. Yeah, you know, if he's the beneficiary from all these midfield injuries that we have at the moment, then, you know, that's a nice sort of bonus for us to have, because he does have a lot to offer. And sometimes even just being able to come on and offer a little bit of that tenacity that he's kind of famous for at this point is really useful in itself.
Yeah. I'm going to have to go back to a negative point, because all the conversation we've had, we'll have Guess the Player Clue 2 in a second, then Patreon Q&A, and then we'll talk about Bayern Munich, and we'll have the Academy briefing where you can find out more about like future Hannibals. But all of this talk about Ten Hag's changes and the pressing system and whatever, it always feels like if we finish a podcast without referencing the fact that the rot starts at the top, it just feels wrong. Because this does to me feel like discounting moments of genuine tragedy like 1958 and the post-war era. This is probably the hardest climate for United manager to succeed in the modern era, I think. The ownership uncertainty, more chaos at the end of another transfer window, injuries to so many key players at the start of the season and to new signings, being hamstrung by the owners who haven't left yet. And then Greenwood, Anthony, Sancho, having had Ronaldo last season, 7-0 at Liverpool, and so many other things. And all of this in when there's a bigger than ever media circus around United. It's so difficult. It's just Ten Hag has just been putting fires out since he joined United. And that's why I'll be patient with him, because I think he's a great coach and I have faith that he's doing the right things at United. But yeah, in the context of this game, I thought it was a really bad day for him. But I'm still impressed with how he continues to handle the number of different fires there seem to be at United on a daily basis.
One, this is where I think last year was so crucial for him, even now, because
yeah,
I think if we had finished fifth last year and kind of laboured throughout a pretty poor season, it would be a very, very different climate around the club and among the fan base than it is now. And, you know, we talked at length last year about how he sort of needed to get the results to a point where it sort of laid the foundations for him to make these kind of bigger changes. And he's sort of basically, I think now the way I would sort of describe it is he's sort of using up the credit that he built up in the bank last year.
Absolutely.
And that's fair enough. You know,
yeah,
there is an amount of credit in the bank from Ten Hag, because he did do well last season. He did get us back to, you know, winning trophies, playing some better football. And I think because of that, you've got to be more patient with him than we have been maybe with managers in the recent past. And I think, you know, results like this and a start to the season like this is something that we can deal with if, in the sort of broader terms, we can see him holding the right people to account and moving the club in a generally positive direction. And I think the weight of evidence that we have from last year is that he is doing that. And obviously we do want to see that this year, but 5-6 games at the start of the season can't outweigh what we saw over 60 games last year.
Yeah. I also think this just popped into my mind as I was casting it forward to when we'll be previewing the Bayern match later, that in this kind of context where there's so many injuries and we're unable to deal with them, and the style of play is not fully embedded at all, and the signs on that front aren't great at the moment. United is so far off from challenging for the title. But I think when we spoke in pre-season about, we were asked about expectations, and or less about expectations on what could United win. Could they win the Premier League? And our answer was no. Could they win the Champions League? And I can't remember what you said, but my answer was definitely. And there is still that faint hope that with a fully fit team, and perhaps we won't ever get that this season, maybe it'll be one of those years, and they do happen sometimes, but with Varane and Shaw back and Amrabat as an option and Mount there, and whatever's going to happen with the right wingers for a variety of reasons, some grimmer than others, and Hoyland fully fit and playing every game, and Onana fully settled into the team, and Martinez back at his best, and all of this, you do think, and St. Ogg's coaching ability, you think maybe United still can win the Champions League, but we'll have to get through your groups in autumn first, and I fear that this autumn winter period is going to be very difficult. Anything else before it gets to play?
I think
go on.
Yeah, I think a key thing for me is Ten Hag's got to figure out what he's going to do at that right wing, because it doesn't seem like Antony or Sancho are coming back anytime soon. Maybe Sancho could if him and Ten Hag sort out their differences, but if it seems like Ten Hag's condition for Sancho coming back is Sancho apologising, which if he hasn't done it yet, I don't see that really changing. And it seems like from what we saw on the evidence of yesterday that Ten Hag doesn't trust Pulisic at this point. And, you know, I can sit here and say I don't agree with that, and I probably don't on balance, but I obviously don't see Pulisic training every day. But I think Ten Hag needs to figure out a solution there and quick, because that doesn't seem like it's something that's going to be sorted out anytime soon. If Pulisic isn't trusted to start or play significant minutes, either A, someone else is going to have to fill in there, or B, we have to figure out how to effectively play in this diamond formation. And maybe that is the way forward. Maybe that gives Rashford the freedom to, you know, be in these good areas and play as sort of almost like a hybrid left winger and up front, because he can come out to the left. It enables us to get...
Especially if you're thinking it was McTominay who played in this game, but when the squad's back fully fit, it could be Mason Mount or Amrabat or whatever.
And supposedly Mount and Amrabat's injuries are short term and they will be back soon. So you've got to hope that can happen. And at that point, if you can have a midfield consisting of four of Casemiro, Mount, Amrabat, Fernandez, McTominay, Eriksen, that does it like a strength that we can build on.
You've got me all hopeful again. Thank you very much.
But that's kind of the point is though, like that hope, it can be hope. And I don't doubt that United can play effectively in a diamond, but that also requires adjustments everywhere else in the team that we need to figure out.
Yeah. Guess the player clue two. Bear in mind that the first one was, I captain my country and I'm their all-time leading goal scorer. And clue two is, I played in my home country first and then Germany, France, Greece and India, with England sandwiched in between. And I joined United from another Premier League club for a £30 million fee.
Oh.
So I played in my home country first, then Germany, France, Greece and India, with England sandwiched in between. And I joined United from another Premier League club for a £30 million fee.
So,
any advances?
Well, yeah, so a couple of players that I had in my head beforehand were Chicharito, who was also in my head as you were listening with the countries that he played in, and maybe Forlan. But, I mean, we didn't buy a Chicharito or Forlan from another Premier League team.
Mm.
Same Van Nistelrooy, no, it was not him because he played in Spain. I've got a name in my head that I will message you so that you see what my answer is, but I won't reveal it yet so that people can have the last clue. But I've got a guess.
All right, well, I've guessed to play clue three after this break for non-patrons, and for patrons, we'll go into our Q&A.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Coming out of the break and the patron Q&A for our patrons, a very short update on the academy The under-18s beat Nottingham Forest 2-1 with a late penalty from Victor Moussa at the weekend. United played with 10 men from the 42nd minute due to Ashton missing, sending off. Jack Kingdon got the equaliser before Moussa's 91st minute strike. Moussa is eligible for England, Nigeria and Spain, I think. And there might even be a fourth country. He really kicked on around, I think it was January, February last season, scored 5 goals in 4 games or something and really started playing with some energy and some verve, and is doing well. It's also UEFA Youth League week. The Youth League mirrors the Champions League. So United play Bayern, I think at 3 p.m. I can't remember whether that's local time or British time, but 3 or 4 p.m. in Munich. It will be a really interesting test. The Youth League is, I feel like most academy people normally say the Youth Cup is like the real marker of success for an academy, and it is, but it offers brilliant kind of development opportunities. But the Youth League, you're guaranteed 6 games, and so it's probably a better marker of it. And it's also a very useful marker of seeing who the academy really values and thinks are the key talents, because you're bringing together players from the under 21s, the under 20s, under 19s, 18s and 17s even. So if there's a 16-year-old in that team, or sometimes even a 15-year-old, Shola Shuretire played in it when he was 14, then you know they're a player that the academy really values, because they want to get them into the very best games to really challenge themselves. And that's what this one will be away at Bayern Munich. United's academy has a really close relationship with Bayern. They've played each other very often recently. United played at a tournament at Bayern's training camp recently. I think that was the under-19s, the 17s, the 15s have played each other recently as well. But United, Benfica and Bayern also work on a psychology program together and share tips and advice. So, which is a really good scheme. And so United and Bayern know each other well, obviously as clubs as well, because of the various events and sites to do with the Munich air disaster as well. So that should be a good game. I can't remember what the Youth League will be streamed on this year. I'd imagine it'll be on TNT Sports. Otherwise, maybe on UEFA TV as well. And we'll preview the senior team against Bayern in just a second after the third and final guess the player clue. Jack has sent me his guess. I won't tell you whether it's right or wrong yet. We'll have clue 3 and then I'll give you the reveal right at the end of the show. So the third clue is I won 2 Premier League titles and the Premier League Golden Boot. I won 2 Premier League titles and the Premier League Golden Boot. So Jack's given me his guess, so I won't ask him for it. In fact, I'll ask you for it at the end. Let's have a preview of Bayern Munich. Are you confident? When we were asked what for our prediction in this game in the Patreon mailbag last week, you said United would win. Do you think that's the case?
I still am weirdly confident, yeah. More than recent performances would indicate. I don't know, United have a tendency, well, admittedly, away in big games obviously has not been good in the last year or so, but we have a tendency in the Champions League, I think, to play up when we're playing very good opposition, especially away from home. And I don't know, it does feel like this is a big opportunity for us to lay down almost like an emotional marker as a way of to stem the tide of what it feels like a lot of bad momentum that we have built up. And if you don't concede an early goal, this is a team that suits these kind of games, because we have players like Martinez and Casemiro and McTominay that, if for want of a more sort of nuanced, like good analysis, they love a fight, and that is what this is going to end up being if we don't concede an early goal, because we're not going to have much possession. Bayern probably will
hit them on the break.
Turn us back. Exactly, and then we can hit them on the break with players like Rashford, and Hoyland will also probably be a big part of that, because he hopefully will be able to help us get a little bit of respite, hold the ball up better. I think there are going to be opportunities for United in this game. Whether we take them is another question, but I do think we will get some joy here.
I can picture us talking about this game saying, oh, if only that one that hit the bar had gone in, how different would that 4-1 defeat have been?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not feeling as confident as you. I hope it will be a game decided by fine margins. I expect even if it is, United will lose, but there is a chance. Bayern aren't that good at the moment. They are pretty good. And a key problem is the fact they have Harry Kane and we don't. So let's see how that goes. Although I was convinced that Evan Ferguson was going to score at Old Trafford. He obviously didn't start, but he'd come off the bench and he didn't. And I'm convinced Harry Kane will score against us. So maybe he won't. And that would be...
I'm sure there'll be a lot of hand-wringing in the media. So many articles about, this is exactly what United could have had and passed on and everything like that.
Yeah, Definitely. There'll be a 3,800 allocation for United fans at the Allianz Arena. It's the first time I'm going to the stadium. I'm really excited. It's obviously has become such an iconic stadium, but also just a brilliantly built one that seems. It's funny because the Emirates was built at a similar time. The Allianz opened in 2005, the Emirates 2006. And I don't know, but when I've been to the Emirates, it's still kind of a great stadium to look at, but it can be a bit. There's elements of it that feel a bit old, and it's obviously an imperfect design sound wise and kind of just as a football stadium compared to like the Spurs ground. But from what I hear about the Allianz, that's not the case there. And it still feels like a really modern world-class stadium. So I'm really looking forward to that. I'm really looking forward to going to Munich and Oktoberfest and Munsterplatz. But yeah, 3,800, just under that, tickets in the away end. I think there might be a couple hundred traveling without tickets, but not many because it's stupidly expensive, this one, because of Oktoberfest. So accommodation in Munich is like 300 quid for, I think I might have mentioned this last week, but like 300 quid for a hotel. So I think I also mentioned the fact that me and my brother are staying in Shepherd's Hut. So I'll tell you more about that when we come back. Yeah, but it should be great. If anyone, any listeners are in Munich and fancy a pint or a stein of Paulaner or whatever Bavarian beer will be getting served in Lederhosen, then let me know. It'd be good to see you. Right, guess the player reveal. Anything else on the Bayern match before I give you guess the player reveal? I'm excited. United back in the Champions League. This is what we wanted. And it's the first game back is a huge one against Bayern Munich. So I guess there's that.
Sort of nice to get the toughest game on paper, at least, out of the way as well.
I think that's true. Yeah. Although if we lose it, we'll be saying, oh God, we've got a long way to make up now. But that's football.
I'd rather that though than go into like match day 5.
Oh yeah.
Needing 4 points from the last 2 games and knowing you have to get something from the Allianz. At least this way you come away with a loss and you've still got plenty of time to make up for it.
Yep, definitely. It's quite a competitive group.
Yeah.
So I guess you might be able to qualify with 9 points. Ferguson's thing was always just win your home games in Europe and that should do enough for you. We'll see. But because Galatasaray and Copenhagen, I don't know that much about them, but it seems to me that they each of them could be beating each other. One of them might cause a problem to Bayern. So should be pretty competitive, which could be good and bad for United. All right, guess the player reveal. As a reminder, the last clue was that I won 2 Premier League titles and the Premier League Golden Boot. The first clue was I captained my country and I'm their all-time leading goal scorer. And the second clue was I played in my home country first, then Germany, France, Greece and India with England sandwiched in between. And I joined United from another Premier League club for a £30 million fee. Jack, you've got the answer right. After clue 2, you got it. So that's 2 points. And would you like to reveal who guest the player is this week?
Lovely. Yeah, Dimitar Berbatov.
Yeah, absolutely. Bulgaria's all-time leading goal scorer.
It was the 30 million from another Premier League club that I got.
Yeah. I thought that would be...
Knowing I was thinking about a striker, big striker signings are pretty rare and you tend to remember them pretty well, especially when they're from another Premier League
Daniel Levy's
team.
Involved. Yeah. Yeah, well done. Lovely player and seems to be, by all accounts, a lovely and very thoughtful man as well and funny. And I saw a video of him just practicing volleys the other day. It was just like mesmerising. It was lovely. Anyway, on that slightly more positive note than the rest of the episode. Thank you for listening, everyone. For more from us throughout the week, maybe some pictures from Munich from me and some thoughts on the game live from Jack. You can find Jack on Twitter at
UTDTate, T-A-I-T.
And me at HarryRobinson64 and the podcast itself at UTD Weekly Pod. If you've enjoyed the show and you have enjoyed it for many months or maybe even years, you might like to consider signing up to become a patron. You can do so for as little as £1.50 a month and you'll get access to those 15 to 20 minute bonus sections every show and you'll get to ask the questions for it and for our patron mailbags during the international break. You'll also get ad-free shows and you'll get them released at least 12 hours or so before the show comes out on Spotify or Apple or wherever you listen to your podcast. So if you can't afford to do that, no, that's absolutely fine. Or you just don't want to, that's also fine. But if you could leave a review, that's a massive help as well. Or just share it on Twitter or with your mates. All of those things are brilliant and much appreciated, as is just the fact you're listening to us and you've got to the end. So thank you and have a great week and we'll speak to you very soon. Goodbye.
Podcast Network.